Welcome to the Be Bold Podcast. I'm Beth Whitman. Hey, thanks for being with me today. If you are new to the podcast, welcome. The Be Bold Podcast is where I feature conversations with women who have inspirational stories to share. Many of these women are on the cutting edge. They are forging their own paths to success, whatever that means to them. And really, they are not only kicking butt in the process, but they are showing us that nothing is impossible. These are women who come from a wide range of backgrounds, and they find themselves in an equally wide range of stages in their lives. But what they have in common is they are bold in what they do. They follow what they love, and somehow they've created a lifestyle that supports it. When we hear stories about other people's success, particularly women, because I think that our stories are not told often enough, when we hear these stories, we become inspired. We become motivated to make changes in our own lives. And you can bet that I take away as much inspiration from these women as you do. We all have the ability to become better versions of ourselves. And what I'm hoping is that you'll find pearls of wisdom in these conversations, just as I do. Bits of information that inspire and motivate. And I'm hoping you'll hear something that makes you want to change and make choices in your life that ultimately makes you happier and more fulfilled. That's my goal here. And I'm so glad that you're here with me. An exciting note before I get to today's guest, I just launched my Patreon page. This is a way for you to support the podcast and become a more integral part of the Be Bold community. Now, Patreon, as I mentioned in earlier episodes, is a platform that allows people to support content creators. Look, podcasts are free, and I believe they should stay that way because, frankly, I want as many people as possible to have access to these conversations. But it's definitely not free to produce these, and I'm not complaining at all. I love this. But it is quite costly when you consider the equipment, my editor, and the travel associated with me recording these in-person conversations. So basically, for $5, the cost of a latte, you can be a patron of the Be Bold Podcast on a monthly basis. Now, not only will you be supporting what I do, but you'll have access to bonus audio content. This content, for now, will be questions I've asked guests that have been on the show, but questions that you have not yet heard. Special things I've had them answer after we recorded the main chunk of content. So right now, the first 10 people to sign up as patrons will receive their choice of either a Be Bold bracelet or a Be Bold baseball cap. Wouldn't that be great for the holidays? Either one of those. Right now, I'm only able to ship to the US and Canada. So just make note of that. So bonus content, a Be Bold bracelet or baseball cap, and the knowledge that you're getting super big karma points to support what I'm doing. In the future, depending on what the community finds valuable, we might have our own private Facebook group, or I might have you involved in curating questions for future guests. So you can find the Be Bold Podcast Patreon page at Patreon, that's Patreon.com, patreon.com/Be Bold. I'll also link to it in the show notes, so you can just click directly to it. And those show notes are wherever you listen to this podcast, as well as on the BeBoldPodcast.com website. Thank you in advance for your support. I can't wait to see who joins me. Okay, now on to today's episode. This conversation is with Pam LeBlanc. Pam spent nearly 21 years writing about fitness, adventure, and travel for the Austin American Statesman, Austin's daily newspaper. It was there that she wrote a weekly column called Fit City. And it's a befitting column for someone who considers herself to be an outdoor junkie. While she had done a number of things over the years that tested her confidence and really forced her to stretch herself, she declared 2017 as her year of adventure, and she set out to purposely do things that she was uncomfortable with. In her article, declaring her year of adventure, she ends with this, quote, "Take a flying leap, splash hard, get your hair wet, and smudge your makeup," unquote. Now, I love that. During her adventurous year, she jumped off a 10-meter diving board, and she's a person who doesn't like heights. She ran a naked 5K race, and she rappelled down a 38-story high-rise in Austin, and she did that dressed in a Wonder Woman suit, of course. And all of those she describes in this episode. Pam is someone who confronts life head-on and lives it to the fullest. You're going to hear all kinds of stories about her adventures here, but what I hope you'll take away from this conversation is that we can create adventures in our lives, big and small, every single day. Before I get to that conversation, just a reminder to please, please, please subscribe to this podcast in whatever app it is that you're using to listen. When you subscribe, you're basically giving a vote of confidence to me, to the podcast, and you're telling your podcast provider that you're enjoying what you're hearing and that others will too. Most importantly, it helps the podcast's ranking in that search. So if somebody's looking for bold or bold women, that'll help it rank up there. So please do me that solid. It is really, really helpful. Don't forget that if you leave a message at 877-280-5170, I'll feature your question on a future episode. It's a nice little Q&A that I love doing and I want to do more of it. So please, if you have a burning question, don't hesitate to leave it on a voice message because I have so much fun answering those. Also, right now, I'm gathering up stories about what you've done to be bold. Large or small, whatever it is, let me know on that same voicemail line. If it's something that's stretched you a bit or you are uncomfortable with, but you did it anyway, that's what I'm looking for. I'll then share it in an end-of-the-year wrap-up episode. That's 877-280-5170, and that number is also in the show notes. Okay, with that, please enjoy this conversation with the amazing Pam LeBlanc. How long have you lived in Austin?
I have been in Austin since 1969. I left.
You were a youngin.
I know. I drove here when I was four. No. I was born in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and my dad was an aeronautical engineer, and his company shut down there, and so he got a job here. And I thought I was going to the land of, you know, tumbleweeds and longhorn cattle on every corner.
It wasn't like that in 1969.
Well, it sort of was,
I bet
actually.
It was. My gosh, it has changed so much. Like, I think my first trip here was probably in 92.
Okay.
And I've been back a couple of times since then, but I just know as I watch South by Southwest and watch the growth that it has changed a lot over the years. Yeah.
I went to A&M, so I didn't go to school. I have two sisters who went to UT, but I went to A&M and then.
Where's A&M?
College Station is just a couple hours away.
Oh, okay.
So I went there and then I lived in Dallas and then for a few years working at a small paper, which was really fun because you got to do everything. Then I moved to McAllen, which is down on the tip of right down near South Padre Island,
yep.
If you've heard of that.
Yep.
So it's just up the Rio Grande from that and worked there for 7 years and then finally came back to Austin for this job.
How do you like Texas as a whole?
You know, it's funny that you say that because I just was having a conversation with somebody the other day. I am 54 and I have lived in Texas for 50 years. But I have never, until the last year or two, I would say, have never considered myself a Texan because I was born out of state. I'm a Yankee. I still say, everyone says I say the word out funny, but I don't know.
Like more Canadian.
Canadian or something like out. So I have been going through this debate in my mind, like, okay, the 38-year-old person who was born in Texas, are they more Texan than me? I'm 54, but I wasn't born in Texas, but I've been here longer than them. So I've had this whole mental debate about it. But I wasn't proud of being a Texan, and I don't know why that switched, but now Texas is great.
But they say
Austin is great.
Yeah, exactly.
We're a little oasis.
Right. They say I can see how there's a difference between embracing are you an Austinite? Is that what, I don't know what it is. Austinian?
I don't know what they call us.
Oh, gosh. After 50
weird
years, you
people.
Don't know. Well, no, I can see that there's a difference between an Austinite and a Texan.
Yes, absolutely.
So, but now
thank goodness.
Yeah, but now you say you're kind of identifying and embracing maybe the Texan.
Although, I think of myself as an Austinite, I guess.
Okay.
Well, Texan, I love the landscape here, and I travel all over the state, and I especially love West Texas. And I've been to West Texas 5 times this year alone, and it takes like days to drive across.
I know it does. I've driven across it before. It's like, when was this going to stop? Oh yeah. My God. Yeah, it goes on a long way. Yeah.
So I just like the big open spaces and the idea that you can still kind of get lost out there. And there's such diversity within the state, the natural sights of it. And I love the hill country, and I love the rivers.
I can see as someone, like, it makes total sense as someone who really embraces the outdoors.
Right.
You are finding all sorts of nooks and crannies all over the state to
enjoy.
There
are many of them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know, and people talk about travel, and I love to travel overseas. I do love that. But I also feel like there's so much to see within our country and within our state. And, you know, I go out all the time and find new things.
How do you find them?
People tell me stuff. Like, I have probably been to Big Bend 40 or 50 times in my life. And people, like, just last year, this guy who's worked for a guiding company out in Terlingua called me and said, "Hey, I want to take you to the prettiest place in Texas." And I was like, "Really? Where is it?" And so I went out there sight unseen, and he took me to a pretty amazing spot. I'm not convinced it's the prettiest place, because there are a lot of pretty places in this state.
And it depends on the time of year, too.
Right. Yeah. And it was January, and we went backpacking, and he had to cache water a few days ahead of time. And it was like a 2-day walk out, not on a trail. We went up a trail for the first 9 miles, then the trail kind of evaporated. And it was like he had metal filings in his nose, and he just knew where to go. And it was a point on a cliff high above the Rio Grande. He had spotted the spot by rafting below and looking up and seeing it, and then figured out how to get there. But you could stand on this point and look down two sheer walls, and I couldn't stand because I'm really afraid of heights, so I had to belly crawl up to it and kind of peer over the edge. but it was quite pretty. So
what happens to you when you're on that edge and you're looking over?
Oh my gosh, I go crazy. I get this crazy feeling in my stomach, and I want to drop onto all fours. My husband and I were backpacking in Glacier National Park one time and came to a point on the trail with sheer drop off, and it just makes my stomach kind of float. And I had to hand him my backpack and crawl on my hands and knees for an eighth of a mile. It was stopping periodically to curl up in the fetal position and weep. But it was
seriously.
Yes.
Wow. Do you have kids?
No.
Well, the reason I ask is that I go to Bhutan quite a bit, and there's a hike up to Tiger's Nest, which is like kind of the pinnacle and the iconic temple in Bhutan. And it's just amazing. And it's perched on the side of this cliff. It's like someone just took super glue and just stuck it there. It's really crazy. But it's a 2-hour hike up. And now there are some railings and steps that they've carved in that makes it a little bit easier. But I've been going there for 11 years, 10 years or something like that. And early on, when there weren't these railings, I would have people go, these women on my tours. And in one group, they identified the fact that it was the women who had kids who had a deeper fear of this, or the fear had developed after they had kids, but they hadn't had it before. So that's why I was wondering, is maybe there was like a maternal thing that's there. But I also don't have kids. I also get queasy it's really weird. I get even queasier if I'm holding my phone to take a photo, because I imagine it dropping off. It never has. But I just get
I could see that
feeling, and then I have to like really pull myself back and make sure.
It's like there's that invisible cord pulling you to the edge, making you want to throw yourself off. I don't know why it is. My dad was afraid of heights, and I think I picked it up from him. And I will say that I think I've gotten a little bit better. And on subsequent backpacking trips, I've found that if someone is walking right in front of me, not my husband, because that doesn't work, but if someone else is walking in front of me, I can look at his or her feet and not look off the edge and just get through. It still makes me feel terrible, but
yeah, I think that's pretty common, is that if you're looking at something, you know, just directly in front of you, then
right,
you're not thinking about the side.
I interviewed Alex Honnold last year, the climber who...
Oh yeah, I just saw Free Solo.
Right, isn't that a great movie?
Oh my God.
Oh my God. And when I interviewed him, I was asking him what he was afraid of, and he's actually not so much anymore, but he was mortified by public speaking. He told me that he couldn't even, like, if his computer wasn't working, he couldn't call IT. Like, he had to rehearse it in his mind because he was nervous about talking to people he didn't know. But I told him, I said, well, I'm afraid of heights. So what you do just astounds me. And he said, are you afraid of heights or are you afraid of falling? And I was like, huh, I'm not afraid of heights.
Yeah.
I'm afraid of falling off heights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He off heights.
Interesting.
But he has no fear because you see in the movie
that his amygdala
is doing nothing there.
Oh my gosh, crazy.
I know. But I don't think I'm speaking out of turn. I mean, I don't even know him, but it seems like he's on the spectrum. At some level that there's other brain activity or lack of brain activity, not to take anything away from him, but there's something going on there that isn't switched on or, you know, is switched off or whatever.
Interesting. That's an interesting documentary. I really liked it.
Oh my God. Yeah. And for listeners, go see Free Solo.
Yes.
And Meru is another one that Jimmy Chin had directed, which is another fantastic
one.
And it's just like, the movies are golden. Free Solo. Not only is it amazing, an amazing story, but it's just told so well, and it just
and the visuals are so good. And it's not just about climbing; it's about his personal life. And it reminds me, after I interviewed Alex and wrote that story, his mother, she must have had a Google alert set or something, so she saw the story and she contacted me. And then I did a story about her because we talked about how for every birthday she would go on an adventure with Alex. And it was usually a climbing adventure. And after he free soloed El Capitan, they went and climbed El Capitan with ropes and harnesses and gear. Yes. They trained for a year. And then I'll have to dig up that story. But she's pretty amazing herself, right?
Yeah. Maybe you could put me in touch with her.
Oh, I can. Yeah. Done.
For the podcast.
Yeah,
wow.
Done. Consider it
My
done.
My goodness.
She's very nice.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. She didn't strike me as someone in the movie as she's out there, you know, just climbing.
Right.
Wow. Good for her. Man. Do you climb?
No. I mean, I have climbed, 10 feet, and I've done some taken some climbing classes. And last year I did one climbing story that actually kind of worked for me. It was called Deep Water Soloing. So we have a series of lakes around Austin, Central Texas, and this guy does tours where he'll take you out on his boat and then you climb the cliff walls. And then if or when you fall into the water. And I'm a water person. So for me, that was like, that's how I can climb. I'm not afraid to fall into the water. So it made it really fun, actually. And it wasn't El Capitan climbing. It was like, 30 feet or something.
Yeah, but you were afraid of falling into the water another time, though, because I read the story.
Yeah. Well, there's the diving.
The 10-meter dive.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Well, let's talk about, because you've got, we might be here all afternoon. Let's sharing incredible stories here, and I know you've got a lot of them. Let's start with what you're doing now, what you've just kind of wrapped up, and then what you're working on. And then I want to just kind of go into some of those stories, just kind of backtrack and figure out how you got here.
Sure. Yeah. I'm still trying to figure that out myself. So for the last almost 21 years, I've been a staff writer at the Austin American-Statesman, the local daily newspaper here in Austin, Texas. And I came in as a writer working in a bureau, kind of covering school boards and city councils and horrible things like that, and kept telling my bosses, what I really want to do is write about features or outdoor stuff or not hard news kind of things.
Were you a real outdoors person at that point, or you just knew you had a
leaning? Not as much as I am now. And I was trending that way. And I guess compared to the regular person, I was never an athlete in high school. I'm 54, so it was before Title IX, and no one pushed me to do anything athletic, even remotely athletic, although my family did camp, and we did do some, outdoorsy stuff, but not like I like now. So eventually, I was able to get a job in the features department downtown, and at some point, somebody suggested to me starting a fitness column. You know, Austin is really fitness-oriented. We've got Lance Armstrong and lots of really big outdoors names here.
I didn't realize that. I mean, I know is the column actually Fit City?
The column was
Fit
was
City.
Fit
Sorry.
City. No, that's okay.
Yeah. But I didn't realize. I mean, I read Fit City when I was introduced to you, and it just didn't strike me as, a lot of fit people are living in Austin.
Well, and I didn't want the column to focus only on super elite fit people. So what it kind of evolved into was, it was a little bit of super fit people, and it was a little bit about people that were doing unusual things or regular people who were attempting to do things that maybe scared them. And one of the stories that got the most attention over that column ran, I think, 15 years. And I will be doing some freelance for the Statesman again before we get into all that. But one of the stories that got the most reaction was a story I did about a local woman who was probably in her 40s, and she was out of shape, very overweight, and she decided that she was going to do a triathlon. She had never done anything like that before. And so we tagged along with her for a few months as she went through the training process. And just, I think, being able to show images of someone that maybe looked like yourself or someone else you knew, I got tons of mail. I mean, she inspired so many people just to get off the couch. So I'm all about encouraging people to do anything, to do something that's not, you maybe thought you couldn't do. So that's kind of where the column went over the years. But so I left the Statesman 2 months ago and I've gone freelance. And what I'm hoping to do is kind of take that same idea and just do it on a broader scale. I'm wrapping up a book project, which is unrelated to that. It's about a local environmentalist, but now I'm wanting to write about big adventure all around the country. And I have some irons in the fire, I guess.
So U.S. based or U.S. or Americans?
It could be a little bit of both. But one of the ones that I'm most excited about is the paddler, the Austin paddler, West Hansen, who became the first, or he led an expedition and became the first person to paddle the newly discovered source, because they determined that the source of the Amazon wasn't what they originally thought it was. But in 2012, he and a team paddled the Amazon River from source to sea. And it took them, I think, 111 days. And he had all kinds of interesting adventures. So he then went on to paddle the Volga River in Russia. And now he's looking to paddle, to become the first person to paddle the Northwest Passage in the Arctic.
And have these been National Geographic sponsored?
One of them, the Amazon River Expedition, I believe, was sponsored, or they partially supported or whatever. I don't know all the details of it, by National Geographic. So just that first one. So that's one that I'm hoping that I can be involved in some sort of way by writing about it for different publications. Maybe a book. I don't know. We'll see.
How's the market in terms of writing? So you were with the Statesman for almost 21 years.
Right.
No longer there, but now you're doing freelance
work.
So who are you working with and where are you working and what's really out there these days?
It's all new and I'm learning as I go, but opportunity has kind of been raining from the sky, which is a relief. I wasn't sure how it was going to go. It was the hardest decision of my life because honestly, I have loved my job at the Statesman, and people would come up to me all the time and say, what do you do? And I would say, I'm a staff writer at the Austin American Statesman and I write about adventure and travel and fitness. And it's the best job in America or the world. And truly, for me, it was the best job in the world. The industry is changing, and I still support and admire and love the Statesman with all my soul. So so now I am writing for Texas Highways Magazine. I'm writing for Texas Parks and Wildlife Magazine. Just got a couple of assignments for Real Simple Magazine, some fitness stories there. Doing some public speaking, which had never, I don't know, people just called me and asked. So I did it. So I had some of that and putting feelers out, hoping now to move to a larger platform and to work for bigger magazines than just local, hoping to work for some national magazines. Mm-hmm.
And the speaking gigs, what are you speaking on?
People ask me to talk about everything from my year of adventure.
We'll get into in a moment.
Yeah. The year of adventure is high on the list. Talking about fitness opportunities in Central Texas, or if you're tired of swimming, biking, and running, what kind of other things can you do? Because I did a lot of that in my column. Like, you know, you don't want to run because that's too boring. So why don't you go, you know, whatever it is,
kayaking, or
things. Yeah. So there's that, and then that's my work life. And another reason I quit was to hopefully have a little bit more time in my private life, because my life has been really, really hectic the last few years. And I was kind of hoping it would ratchet back a little. I don't actually think it's going to.
Now the phone's ringing too much.
And, I don't know, whatever. The other thing is I have recently gotten interested in paddling. So I was invited by two female veteran paddlers here in town to participate next year in a local race called the Texas Water Safari.
I read a little bit about this. Yeah, it sounds crazy.
It's going to be It'll be exciting.
So explain what it is.
So the Texas Water Safari is a race that's been going on for years, like, I don't know, 45 years or something. And it starts in San Marcos, which is a little town in central Texas on the San Marcos River. And it goes all the way to the Texas coast to a little town called Seadrift, which is 260 miles away. So the time limit is 100 hours. And a lot or
time limit well, of 100 hours.
To officially finish the race is 100 hours. So a lot of teams don't sleep along the way, or they sleep in shifts, or they sleep just for an hour at a time or something. And it's really grueling.
And you're paddling and canoe.
Yes. But when I say canoe, you probably think of a regular aluminum canoe, like in your mind, what you imagine.
Yeah, sure.
And some people do paddle on those, but the faster racers, and I'm going to be on a 3-person team. It's solo, 2-person, 3, 4, 5-person. I can't remember if there's 6 or not, but so a lot of the boats are really narrow racing canoes that don't really, there's one on my truck out front right now. That's a racing canoe. It's skinny and long. So it's not shaped what you probably picture in your mind. So
that sounds less comfortable.
It's kind of a tight squeeze, I guess.
and you can't carry as much with you. And you're out
there. You have a crew that goes along and meets you at certain points along the way. And the rules,
so you can get resupplied.
Yes. And the rules have changed over the years. So the veteran paddlers will tell you that it's, you know, well, ever since the Texas Water Safari became easy. I'm like, oh, fuck you, whatever. So I'm like, no, it's not going to be easy for me. It's going to be really, really, really hard. And people like end up, you know, puking on the side of the river and hallucinating along the way. And there are alligators. And then the alligators are one thing. And I knew to expect alligators because the alligators aren't like 20-foot alligators here. The ones I've seen are small, 4 feet, whatever. But what's crazy are these things called alligator gar, which are giant fish with long, toothy, beaky things. And literally, they're the size of a man.
A fish?
Yes. So you'll be paddling along, and it's warm because the race takes place in June. And these gigantic fish are kind of just lolling on the bottom of the river. And then a canoe comes along. And without warning, all of a sudden, the fish is startled. So the fish breaches up out of the water like a sea monster.
Yeah.
At least that's what it looked like to me. It's kind of alarming.
I had something similar just happen to me in the Amazon, and that's how we got on that discussion
crazy
about your friend West. I was in a lake in a remote area. It takes 2 hours by speedboat and 2 hours by paddle boat to get to this lodge. And as we were coming out after 5 days, we were coming out paddling out, and John was actually paddling, my husband, because we were, you know, we just wanted some exercise because we couldn't do anything there. You know? So I'm just like, can we just paddle?
Yeah.
So he happened to be paddling, and as he was paddling, this, it's a 400-pound fish. And to me, it was like Loch Ness. I'm like, does it really exist? Because our guide kept telling us about it. I'm like, is it really out there? He said, yeah, there's a 400-pound fish. And it came up right in front of our boat. And I just thought, we're going to get dumped over.
Did you wet your pants?
No, almost. No, I've had other experiences where I've almost peed my pants, but not that. But I did, like, I held onto my camera thinking, oh gosh, you know, like I can go in. That's one thing, but my stuff, I was a little bit, my electronics, but,
funny.
But it's kind of that same thing. It's like this huge thing that could dump over your canoe, right?
So I am in the process of trying to learn how to paddle because I always just thought you stuck the paddle in the water. And well, apparently that's not the case. I'm learning from all my, you know, friends that are rolling their eyes at me and stuff. But so I'm taking paddling lessons. That's where I'm going after this. I have a paddling lesson in San Marcos. So a lot of learning. And I just really, my goal is to finish the race. Don't tell that to my teammates because they don't want to hear that. But they're both experienced and have done the race several times.
When is that?
It's in June.
Okay. So you've got some time.
Yes, thank goodness. Yeah.
To practice.
Yeah. And then hopefully right after that, go to the Arctic. We'll see.
Go where?
To the Arctic on the Northwest Passage.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So, but will you be paddling on that?
Or no, just I won't go up be paddling. I'm just going to work on the story.
Got it. Okay. And when is he doing that trip?
In July.
Okay. So summertime, of course.
Correct.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So do you want to talk about your year of adventure? Because I think that ties in really nicely with your former work with the Statesman.
Yes.
And then something kind of happened while you were doing that.
Yeah.
You had to go and have this bright idea.
Yeah, I did. So what happened was my husband and I love to backpack. So a few years ago, we decided to backpack the John Muir Trail in California. It starts in Yosemite and it finishes at Mount Whitney. And it's a 15-day hike. And of course, I wanted to do it. So I did. The trip coincided with a bad case of plantar fasciitis in my foot. So I hadn't been able to run for a while. I took up running late. Like you, I think I ran my first and only marathon when I was 45 or something. And anyway, so I developed plantar fasciitis over the years and then decided to do this backpacking trip. And I can't remember how many miles it was, maybe around 200 miles. So day two, all of a sudden, I'm ruined. Like my feet hurt so bad, I could like plop on the ground and just cry. It was horrible. And took off my shoes that night and looked, and all my toes were bashing the front of my shoes. I'm like, why is this happening? This is like such a dumb move too. You know, I know better. Like, but what had happened was I had little inserts that I put in I backpack and trail runner. So I had little inserts that I put in my shoes to help with the plantar fasciitis. And those inserts raised my heel, you know, maybe a half an inch or a quarter of an inch or whatever. And it was causing me to like slide down the front of my shoes and bash my toes into the front of the shoe. So I figured that out, took the inserts out. We wrapped all my toes up in bandages. I have gruesome pictures of my ugly toes. And then everything was better. So I was able to go on. And the trip, there's a resupply point. So you have to go the last 9 days. You resupply by sending yourself a barrel, a bucket full of food. And that bucket is put on a motorboat that goes across the lake, and then a burro picks it up and then takes it. I mean, it's like this hilarious journey. And so you end up at this little resupply place in the middle of nowhere, and there's your bucket, and you refill your backpack. And I'm ultra light, so I don't want to carry a lot of gear. I mean, I'm down to breaking my toothbrush in half because I don't want it to be heavy.
Oh my gosh.
So my backpack weighs like 28 pounds, even with maybe a little bit more than that with 9 days of food. So we're going, and anyway, we're, you know, 5 or 6 days from the end, and I'm just exhausted. It was so tiring. You cross like 10 or 12 mountain passes along the way, and I'm pretty sure.
And these are probably 14,000
yes,
feet or
there's
so?
There's a couple 14, and most of them are 12 to 13. So, you know, I'm slowly like starving because I don't have enough food.
You're dying.
Eating my husband's food, begging for food along the way. It's ridiculous. But anyway, just like getting progressively more exhausted, and like I'm asleep before the sun goes down, and then it's just crazy. So at one point, I remember we had been slogging up this mountain and it was just taking all day long. And I like stop and I'm like, Chris, my husband, Chris, I'm like, I just don't know if I can do this. We're going to have to bail out. We're going to have to find someone to get us or
you
whatever.
Need a transporter.
I need a transporter. And it was great. He pointed down and we looked down the mountain and there's this little glinting dime-sized lake, you know, 80,000 miles below, probably, you know, not quite that far, yeah. But it's glinting in the sun. And he said, but look, you know, you started at that lake and here we are 3 or 4 hours later and you're all the way up here. And it's very cliche, but I was like, gosh, dang it. You know, that's right. Like no one particular step of that backpacking trip was too hard or impossible for me to do. It just seemed collectively daunting. But because of what he said, and when I saw that I was making progress, even though it seemed terribly slow, I could go on. And then I just remember just feeling so great when I finished that backpacking trip. It was amazing. And so I came back from that backpacking trip, and that trip lit a fire inside me. I don't know what happened, but I was like, I want to do that. I want to do stuff like that all the time. I want to be, I've always been an outdoors person, but I was like, I don't want to sit inside at a computer day after day. I just can't do it. That's not what my life is about. That's not why I'm here.
Did you feel like it was, what do they say? Like type B fun, where it's not fun while you're doing it, but it's fun when you look back on it.
It was a mixture of both. It was because I do remember on that trip going, oh my gosh, this is so amazing. And like, I'm totally into skinny dipping for one thing. So, you know, I am all about jumping in a mountain stream and getting naked. And oh my God, I love it. And seeing the beautiful mountain scenery and breathing in the air and just, you know, meeting people along a trail. It's incredible. It's the best thing ever.
Were there a lot of people on the trail?
There's surprisingly...
What year was this?
2 years ago.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
So, yes. So it was after Cheryl Strayed's book and Bill Bryson's book and the movie and all that. So it's limited. You have to apply for a permit. And the hardest thing about doing this trip is getting the permit. So... I don't know, like 80 million people apply and only a tiny percentage get it. We actually started at a slightly alternate route and merged onto the trail, the official John Muir Trail, like 20 miles in.
Did you need a permit?
Permits, but the permits were much easier to get the way we did it.
Okay.
And my husband did all that, so I can't tell you all the details. But so I came back from that trip and I was in Austin and I wrote about it for the Statesman. I wrote about the backpacking trip. And I remember having a conversation with my bosses, telling them, like, you know, it was great. It really kind of changed my life. And so I kept coming up with these story ideas to do kind of ridiculous things. And I don't know where it came from, but somebody said, well, let's make it your year of adventure. And I was like, hell yeah, let's make it my year of adventure. And so we dove into it. The other part of this story is the backpacking trip took place 2 years after my father died of non-smoker's lung cancer, and I was really close to my dad. So when my dad died, his best friend had taken a picture of my dad and had climbed to base camp of
Everest.
Yes, that the big one had climbed to the base camp of Everest. He was 70 and left a picture of my dad up there. I don't condone that because it's trash, but it was great because he was up there. So I came back from a backpacking trip. His name's Morris. Morris called me and said, hey, I want to jump off a 10-meter platform. Want to do it with me? And I was like, well, hell yeah. When your dad's best friend asks you to jump off a 10-meter platform, even if you're terrified of heights, you do it. So I think that was kind of the first official one. We went to the University of Texas, and they have a diving facility there. And I don't know if you have ever stood at the top of a 10-meter platform, but it's really high.
Yeah, but it looks easy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Do it yourself.
Well, I know, but that's the thing about it, is that when you see, you know, professional athletes, you see them at the elite level,
like,
and you look at it and you're like,
how do they do it?
What's the big deal?
I guess they're just used to it. They're numb to it. But to me, okay, so they worked us up. They got coaches. I got two readers or three readers, and then Morris and I did it. And we went to the pool, and two diving coaches we started at a low level and stair-stepped our way up until we got to the 10-meter, which, think about 10 meters, it's like 30-whatever feet. I can't remember.
Right, 33 feet.
Yeah, so you're standing there, but your head is higher than the 30 feet, so that adds, you know, however tall you are. And then you're looking off the edge of the thing, and the surface of the water is 30 feet below the platform, but then the pool itself is 16 feet deep, and there's a black line on the bottom of it. So you're looking all the way down to the bottom, so it seems like you're even higher. And it was plenty high. Mm-hmm. So it was, anyway, so Morris, of course, is the first one off. Like, he doesn't even hesitate. I'm like, oh, dear God. Like, if my dad's 70-year-old pal is going to do this, I'm sure as hell going to do it, too. So what I found was I just looked straight ahead. We didn't dive. We just went down like pencils. So I just kind of walked off the edge and held my arms in.
Now, I read the story about that, and you and at least one other person had talked about your tailbone
being really sore.
Did you feel like you went in at a little bit of an angle?
You try to go in perfectly straight, and I did. Like, my head was tipped slightly back, so I hit my tailbone kind of. Which was surprising. And there was one other woman in the group who was really, really scared.
And you said for weeks that it was felt bruised, right?
A couple weeks it felt bruised. It was not nice.
That's weird. I wouldn't have ever thought about that.
But like, we all made it off. So I was really happy about that. But yeah, I wouldn't have thought about it. I didn't expect that either.
Like, why? Like, otherwise you could break a toe, like, if you're going in, right? I mean, it's
like bad things could happen. Bad things could happen. I don't want to leave it at that. Too much about that.
So you did some really cool things that year. Well, I guess before we move on, because I want to bring that into 2018, but I would love to know about some other things that you did during that year. And what was it like?
It was great. It snowballed. Like, it started, and then we kind of announced that I was going to do a year of adventure. And the more I did, the more people called me with things that they asked me to do with them.
Were they all in Texas?
No. I'm a scuba diver, so I did some scuba diving stuff.
Things that stretched you?
I love to scuba dive. So I will scuba dive with sharks numerous times. So that actually wasn't really a stretch
still,
for me.
Right,
still,
right. So it's still a year of
we
adventure.
Labeled it, yeah.
Right. Of course. Yeah. I don't want to take anything away from that.
But we were trying to do things that did make me feel uncomfortable. And so one of the things I did was I rappelled down a 38-story building in Austin. It was a fundraiser for, pardon me, I can't remember. It'll come to me later. But so I rappelled down a 38-story building and I was like, I have a Wonder Woman costume, so I'm going to wear my Wonder Woman costume when I did it.
Just you, or was it like a group of people?
There were a bunch of people that did it. We all kind of did it at different times. Make-A-Wish, I'm sorry.
Okay.
It was a fundraiser for Make-A-Wish. So, you know, I went at 10 o'clock in the morning or whatever, and then the most horrifying part to me was when you had to stand on the edge of the building. I mean, I knew that I couldn't turn around and look because 38 stories is really high.
That's a little bit higher than 10 meters. Yeah. In the pool.
Luckily, I had a harness on, so that made it better. But it was kind of a mirrored building. So, and one thing I'll say is I'm kind of scrawny, skinny. I'm not supposed to say scrawny, but I'm a small framed person. So there were guys that did this. Part of the way you go down is the counterweight of the rope helps you go down. So you're having to kind of lift the rope and then feed it down. So the big burly guys that weigh 250 pounds are going down really fast. Well, my trip took a lot longer. So it's funny because they put a GoPro on me. And at the end, when they looked at the GoPro footage, or listened, I should say, every other word was a cuss word. Because, and it took me like 20 minutes to go down. And I'm like struggling. And I'm like talking to the guy on the radio like, oh my God. It's like ridiculous. And I couldn't turn around and look back. And I was terrified the whole time. And I didn't look back, except that one part of the climb, I had to climb over reflective material. Like you're walking down kind of like Spider-Man. And so I could see my reflection and then the city behind me. So
it's like it's turning my stomach just thinking of it.
It was
just imagining
fun.
It.
It was an adrenaline rush, and I did not pee my pants, amazingly. But
it was an adrenaline rush.
Yes, it was an adrenaline rush. And then I remember when I finally got to the bottom, I just kind of like had to lay on the sidewalk for a while.
I think of an adrenaline rush as something good, though, as something really? Like, whoa, that was a rush.
Well, it was after I was done.
Okay.
So it was one of those beat. What did you call it? A beat?
Like they say type B fun. So
yes.
Type A is
fun while you're doing
yeah,
it.
Yeah, fun type when you B, look right. back on it.
Yes. Yeah. I've skydived before, and that was really scary. And I've done paragliding off a cliff in Switzerland, which was really scary, flying around. And anyway, some other stuff like that. But I think the most famous thing that I did for my year of adventure that did stretch me a little bit was I did a naked 5K race, and it was really fun. It was in a little town outside of Austin, and
painful for some people.
Well, and I have small boobs, so I will note that you were allowed to wear whatever you wanted to wear. So there were probably 130 people in the race, and 30 of them were women, so it was mostly guys. And you could wear a sports bra or whatever you wanted or needed to. I think most people were naked, except for shoes. I wore shoes and a straw cowboy hat. Straw cowboy hat made me
right.
feel a little pulled together. So, and the weirdest thing was we had to send a photographer to shoot it very strategically. We were a family newspaper, the Statesman was. So the photo editor asked me who to send to shoot it. And I was like, well, is one of the women on staff available? And they weren't. So it was either going to be some guy that I had to see every day in my life, which would have been a little awkward, or he hired a freelancer. And so it was a guy freelancer that I had never met. So we go, I enlisted a couple of my friends to go with me to do this race. And so we got there and I was like, okay, I'm not going to meet the photographer while naked. I'm going to have my clothes on so I can have a normal conversation
of course,
with him.
Yeah.
So we did, and that worked out. And then it was just kind of weird because you're at the race start and everyone's naked. And once
all body types?
All body types. You would not go to admire. This was not an elite race,
yeah,
I will say.
Got
so
it.
So there were all body types there. And I ran into a few people that I knew that I didn't expect to see there, but that were there. And I did notice that as soon as we started running, it was just like any other race. It was a trail race. And it was actually even better.
Were people barefoot?
Some people were. It was in an area that had pine trees, so there were pine needles on lots of the ground.
Okay.
It was actually a difficult course because it was hilly.
Well, when you said pine trees, the first thing I thought you were going to say is that, you know, people were getting scratched up and everything.
No, yeah, none of that.
Especially for the guys.
Don't think about that too much. But so the race was really fun. And as soon as I started running, I was like, oh my God, it's like a regular race, only it's even better because the breeze is running over. You're naked. And I love to be naked. So I'm a middle of the pack runner. I won the woman's race.
Oh, did
it was the only race I have ever run in my life. And it's the only.
Oh, great. Do you have
trophy?
Trophy. Oh, that's cool. Is it a naked girl? No, it's not. They couldn't get a naked.
And you know, a friend of mine had done this race like 7 or 8 years ago and won the guy's race. And he got a homemade trophy of a naked person. And it was his most cherished possession.
Aww.
And so I was hoping that I was going to get a trophy that was homemade and showed
I'll
naked
have to
person.
Take a picture of your trophy and put it in the show notes.
Right. I have a picture of me clutching it like this, like that. So that was really fun. And we did a series of fun and wacky things. I'm a water skier too, and I attempted to do a water ski jump, which ended kind of badly. I crashed and burned multiple times, but I'm all about, it's okay to, you know, I'm all about failing. And it was kind of funny because the guy that took me out to do it said, oh, I've taught, you know, 45 people to do this and every single one has landed it. Well, I was the first that didn't land it, but that's okay. Mm-hmm. I'm all about public humiliation. One of my favorite things that I did was the very last thing that I did as it may not have been part of my official year of adventure, but which morphed into a year of adventure, I will say. At the end of that year, I wrote an article saying, well, it's not a life of adventure because it goes on forever. It's never going to stop. So my very last assignment for the Austin American Statesman, I don't even think the story has run in the paper yet, but was I had been in Colorado a few years prior and was at a restaurant and saw a flyer tacked up on the wall for a burro race. And I was like, a burro race? What's that about? Do you ride the burro? What happens? So I kind of put out a challenge to a circle of people that I knew in Colorado. First person to find me a burro and help me enter one of these races, you know, I'll buy you a bottle of wine or something.
A burrito.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. That's so funny. So Miraculously, this last year, a friend I know who was in Colorado contacted me and said, hey, I'm going to do the burro race. Well, I couldn't do it that year. So this September, I met Fred, my friend.
2018.
Yes, in 2018. Fred and I met in the little town of Victor, Colorado, which is an old mining town. So there's a series of these races that are held around Colorado, an old mining town. So it's a nod to the mining heritage of the state. And no, you do not ride the burro. You rent or you lead the burro. So it's a trail race in the mountains running with the burro. You have to have a burro. But I don't own a burro. So yeah. I had to rent a burro. So I had to rent a burro way, way in advance, like 6 months in advance. So while I'm trying to get my burro, my friend tells me who to contact to do it. So this woman has a herd of, I don't know, 30 or 40 burros, but there's way more demand for the burros than there are burros
available.
Yeah. So I had to write an essay why I want to race a burro and for my application. And I was accepted, luckily, I think because she knew I was writing about it for the paper. So she asked me all sorts of different questions about my burro wrangling abilities, I guess. And then I was assigned a burro, and the burro's name was Little Jonah. And she sent me a little bit of information about him ahead of time so I could find out more about him. Well, I Googled Little Jonah to see how he had performed in previous years. As it turns out, Little Jonah came in last place in nearly every race that he ran.
Oh, poor Little
Jonah.
But I was
like, you know what? That's going to make the best story ever. Yeah. It's going to make a better story because he's the, you know, the sad little
burro.
Yeah,
he's the underdog. Right? Yeah. So did he come in last?
No.
Okay.
He didn't.
Good
we did
for
not
you.
Come in last. So,
good for you.
And my friend that I did this race with is a very fast runner. And I'm, like I said, I'm kind of middle of the pack runner. And he got, so I will say when they brought Little Jonah out, Little Jonah is a miniature burro. I didn't know he was a miniature burro. And so he's the size as tall as your desk. He probably weighs 350 pounds or something. Whereas,
so 3 feet or so probably.
Yeah. 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 And so there were other people there that had miniature burros, but there were also people that had full size burros that were twice as big as the miniature burros. So my friend had little Jonah's brother, who was a full-size burro. So here's I'm the middle of the pack runner with the tiny burro, and he's the fast runner with the big tall burro. Well, the race starts. They do the starting horn, and the town is like, the streets go straight up. So you start running up. The horn goes off. The burros all like immediately start charging up the hill as fast as they can. And I can't, I'm at elevation. I live in Austin where the elevation's 560 feet.
You can't keep up with little Jonah.
I cannot keep up with little Jonah. He's running so fast. His little hooves are clattering on the pavement. Aww. I'm about to like bust my ass and fall on the ground. And all, so I'm like, finally I get him to slow down and stop. And all the other burros race past us. And the burros, it turns out, like to stay together. They're social. So they want to run together. When I took all his friends away because I slowed down, then he didn't want to run at all. So we run up the street, then we're onto trail and it's off road up into the mountains. And then from then on, it's like this sequence where little Jonah is either running at full tilt boogie as fast as he can, and I'm gasping for breath, just like water skiing behind him, holding onto his tether, or he's at a complete halt. And I'm like standing behind him, like twirling the end of the lead rope in the air like a lasso, hi-ho, Silver, or flapping my arm, just trying to get him to move.
Do you have pictures of that? Because that is what I
don't
to
have
see.
That part because there was nobody back there. Oh. I have pictures of me running through town leading little Jonah.
I want to see those.
Yeah, I'll show them to you. But what I was going to say is that at one point, you know, I'm either running or going really slow, running, going really slow. And then my friend, my fast runner friend with a big, strong burro, is stopped by the side of the trail about halfway through the race, and his burro will not budge at all. So I am proud to say that I beat my friend.
But your fast friend.
Yes, I beat my fast friend. So this could be my calling. This could be my sport.
It could be.
Burros are the great leveling thing.
Yeah.
So, and it was so much fun.
That's
not an
Olympic sport yet, though, is it?
It should be. I will lobby for it if they're considering it. It's like an 8-mile run. It was so much fun. Uh-huh. And there was beer and like hot dogs.
And it's not the only one in Colorado.
No, I think there's like 9 of them. It's part of the series. And at the end, the winning burro, there's a prize purse involved. And so if some people have their own burros, but if you've rented a burro and you win, you have to give half your winnings to the burro, which seems fair. Mm-hmm. And the winning burro also got this, it was like a carrot cake, like literally a carrot cake. Like it had frosting on it or something. But when you peeled that off, it was all like ground up carrots inside. So that was really fun. The burro seemed to enjoy it as well. I liked it.
That sounds crazy. Yeah. That was the last assignment
for the Statesman. Okay. Yeah. What a way to go out, because I've been wanting to do it for like 3 years.
Yeah, for a long time. Yeah.
So I was happy about
that. Well, I'm glad you had a chance to do it.
Me too.
So you did this, you did your Year of Adventure in 2017.
Yes.
And then, you alluded to the fact, you said that it's not just a year of adventure, but it's a life of adventure.
Right.
Do you consciously, like I can see if you have a goal and you've got a writing outlet that is kind of holding you responsible to a certain degree, or you feel a responsibility to follow through on this with your year of adventure. How do you get up each morning and then motivate yourself each day and say, how am I going to make today an adventure? Or, you know, what am I going to do? Like, I know you've got this big event coming up, the Texas Water Safari. Yeah. I know you have that coming up, but how do you kind of dig deep and say, okay, what's the next big thing?
Or, you know, I have never had to think about it. It's always just happened. I have wondered, like, what if I can't think of the next thing? Like, what's going to be the next thing? Because that's kind of what keeps me alive, really. But for me, and I say a life of adventure, and I don't mean that every adventure has to be climbing Mount Kilimanjaro, which I have not done, or, you know, it doesn't have to be some huge, giant thing. I am all about injecting adventure in your everyday life.
And have you always been like that? Or is that something that really came with doing your first marathon or starting to run at 45?
I have trended this way for the last 20 years. But I will say that it's gotten to where I have to live it's not even a choice that I make. It's like, I have to live that way. I could not live a different way. It's why I live. It is life. Like, what is life but a series of grand adventures? That's what it is. So for me, that grand adventure can't be something over the top every day. And I don't, when I say adventure, I don't mean life-threatening adventure. That's not me. I'm not a risk taker. I mean, I am on a small scale. I drive my car to a Mopac. That's a risk, isn't it? But it's
to where?
Mopac is the name of the highway through town. So I drive my car on the highway. That's, you know, about as risky as I get, but that's pretty risky. But so it could be, you know,
it's the way you approach life.
Yes.
It sounds
like I want to mix things up. Like I tell people all the time, like, so for example, if you're a runner and you don't think of yourself as a wild adventurer, well, do something like, if you always run in the afternoon with your friends, get up and go run in the dark or do something that's just different. Like it makes me feel alive. Try something that you might not otherwise do. And you might find something that you really, really love. I'm a swimmer. That's my main sport. I've been swimming all my life and water makes me happy. I feel like I'm getting a full body hug. The other thing about swimming is, you know, you're swimming. What else can you do laying down? Well, I mean, I can think of a few things.
But it's really funny. Yeah. Right? Getting naked. Yeah, laying down.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's funny. You know, I just started swimming myself. I mean, I grew up, our neighbors had pools. And so I spent a lot of time at the neighbors just kind of splashing around. So I know how to swim. Like I'm not intimidated by jumping in the water. But more and more, I'm thinking, you know, now that I'm doing the marathons and I just bought a bike last year for the first time. I mean, again, since I was like, oh, yeah, I think I'm heading that way. So John and I just joined our local gym just a few blocks away from us and they've got a beautiful pool. And so I've been jumping in every time I go to work out or I'll just go there to swim. And I'm not a good swimmer. I need lessons.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say I've got to have lessons. But I don't have that same love of it. And I have a friend who, she calls herself the mermaid and she'll say, boy, when you get in the water, don't you just feel glorious? I'm like, no, when I get in the sauna, I feel glorious or the hot tub that's right next to the pool. But getting in the pool is just something.
It's different for everyone. And I tell people this all the time. Like I know that my love of swimming is kind of not everybody has that same feeling. And it's just, you have to find the right thing. I had a swim coach once who told me, don't call this a workout. It's the best part of your day. So I like to think about a lot of things like that. And swimming in a pool isn't the best swimming experience either, I will say. For me, I want to swim outdoors. I want to swim in a lake. I want to swim naked. I want to swim in the ocean. I want to swim in a body of water that has animals and plants and beautiful light shafts flickering through it. I want it to be the full mental and emotional and physical experience.
That's funny because for me, being in the pool is a better experience because I know what the temperature is going to be.
Oh, right.
I know it's going to be just a little bit cooler than room temperature, so I can stand getting in it.
Yeah.
And when I have to go in a river or even an ocean and it's cold, I'm like, I'm so cold. Oh, my God.
Also, that reminded me of something. You know what the pool's going to taste like because I did a couple of years ago with a friend, I did a swimming race around Manhattan Island. So we started at the Battery and swam up the East River, through the Harlem River, and down the Hudson River. We alternated. So it took all day, but it's doable. It's not as horrible as it sounds. But one thing that...
Was this on your own or part of a race?
It was part of a race.
Okay.
It's called the Manhattan Island Marathon Swim.
Oh,
so I think it's 28 miles. So, But you're swimming with the current. So you have to get to certain points before the current switches or you'll never make it. It's really a great race.
Interesting.
But one thing that my partner says about this race, which I always say too, it cracks me up. She says, each one of those rivers tastes different.
Yeah, I don't want to think too much about that. But you're absolutely right about the pool because as much as I swim... I rinse off, I shower off.
You smell like chlorine.
Yeah, I go in the sauna, I take a shower,
I go home,
and then I have my hand over my mouth.
Yeah.
And I go, I still smell like chlorine.
I always smell like that.
Yeah. What are you going to do?
Chlorine and patchouli. I put patchouli on over it. It helps.
Oh, you do? Okay. I'll have to remember that.
Yeah.
I grew up in New Jersey, and the water was so chlorinated. My hair is, it's dirty blonde.
Yeah.
But it's in the summertime, it is
blonde.
It's really blonde. And then in the wintertime, as it is now, it gets much darker.
Yeah.
But my hair was always, I've always been, not accused, but everyone always thinks that I dye my hair, that I bleach my hair. But when I lived in New Jersey, it was because there was so much chlorine in the water.
And the chlorine in the water
bleached it out.
Do you remember? I remember being a kid and being in the pool because I was in the pool all the time. Thus, like, have so many freckles and wrinkles and all that, but that's okay.
That's the price you pay.
Yes, it was totally worth it. I can remember being in the pool so long that my eyes just like watered and hurt from the chlorine. I don't think that really happens anymore.
No, I think they manage it probably a little bit better.
I'm we're probably just eating our skin off.
The chemicals are probably less harsh.
Yeah.
I would hope. Who knows? So what have you done this year, 2018, outside of the year of adventure? How have you kind of continued that in a non-formal way?
Traveling, going to one of my favorite places, Big Bend, doing some backpacking, trying to do a little bit of camping on my own is one thing I'm working on. I've camped with my family, my husband, and friends for a million years, but I'm finding that as I get older, I want to do things on my own and I want to be more self-sufficient and I don't want anybody to have to take care of me. That makes me uncomfortable. I don't like it when people do for me. So
do you mean literally you want to be solo or you want to be self-sufficient in that you and your husband are going, but you're carrying your own backpack?
I want to do it myself alone without anybody with me by myself. And I want to do things with my husband as well, but I also want to do things on my own. And for years I was afraid of camping by myself and I'm not sure why.
Because you're a woman.
Yeah. And we're taught that we should be afraid of it.
Well, yeah, but yes, we are taught that. And I talk about this a lot that we talk ourselves out of doing things because from a very early age, we're told that we can't do it, that it's not safe. I mean, I do so much solo travel around the world, and women especially are amazed at that because they were taught that they can't venture out on their own, that it's not safe. Now, there is some truth to that, though, that you have to take certain precautions.
Absolutely.
Just because we are more of a target.
Yeah.
So I can understand your hesitancy, yet there's always things that you can do to be safe, and to make sure that it's a good, safe experience.
We saw a number of solo female backpackers on the John Muir Trail, which made me happy. But I think that actually, like in the national parks, I think you're probably safer there than you are walking downtown at 10 o'clock on a Friday night. Mm-hmm. So I think you're safer in the backcountry or camping at Big Bend than you are doing a lot of other things. I mean, you're not, and I absolutely agree, you need to take precautions and don't be stupid about it.
Right.
So, and I still haven't gone on a backpacking trip solo. I've been camping alone in Big Bend National Park solo, and I'm fully capable of doing it. I know that physically, I know the routine. I've been backpacking so much. So
would it be weird? Like would Chris or would your friends look at you and say that's weird and make a judgment call about it? Because sometimes I think that that is why we stop ourselves from doing things too, because we don't realize I can't go without my husband because he'll think I don't love him, or our friends will look at it as what's wrong with her for having to take off.
I would say my friends know me better than that, so they wouldn't think it was weird. B, anybody that did think it was weird, fuck them. I don't care. C, I don't know. Is there C? I could go on about it. But that doesn't bother me in the least. Like, whatever. I don't care what people think at this point. I mean, a lot of people think I'm weird because I did the naked 5K race. So whatever.
Well, that is kind of weird. But,
that's okay. That's, you can think it weird, but I don't have a problem with it. You're missing out. That's all I can tell you.
Yeah, I guess so. Huh.
What else did I do in 2018? Yeah. Is that what you're asking me? I've been to Portugal. I'm trying to learn to surf. I went to an all-women surf camp in Costa Rica. I did that as part of my year of adventure, I think, or maybe it was after that. I can't remember. So I went and spent a week in Costa Rica trying to learn how to surf, which was really, really, really fun.
What organization did you go with?
It was called Surf with Amigas, and I completely, highly recommend them. Yeah. It was supposed to be in Nicaragua, but there was unrest in Nicaragua, so they moved it to Costa Rica.
Oh, I'm glad they were able to move it.
Yes.
Because I know I've got friends who run tours in Nicaragua, and they had to cancel completely their programs. Yeah.
So it was a great experience. And then just a few months ago, I went to Portugal and was able to sneak off and do a day of surf lessons. What I found was in Costa Rica, the waves were manageable in the area that I was surfing. And Portugal, I didn't realize that a hurricane was coming in, but the waves were huge and scary. And I got bashed around a lot more than I did in Costa Rica.
Where in Costa Rica were you?
Pavones, which is down by Panama. And just a little kind of a gravel road with a couple of shacks. We stayed in little,
nice.
Outdoor showers. It was the best.
Is that on the Oso Peninsula?
It is near there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Did you have to fly in?
Flew in and then, I flew in and then had to take like a 8-hour literally car drive and a driving rainstorm on shitty ass roads. It was pretty terrifying. That was the scariest part of the whole trip. On the way out, there was an airport maybe an hour and a half away, but that I was able to fly out of. But
the little tiny airstrip?
Yeah, it was hilarious.
Yeah, because I have flown. If it's the same area, I have flown into the Oso Peninsula. Tiny little 6 or 8 person plane.
Yeah.
And it's just a strip.
Yeah.
And there's a shack there.
Yes, that's what it was.
That's
probably the same place.
Yeah,
it was great. I loved it. So surfing's on my list of things that I want to do to challenge myself with, because that anything with water, I pretty much am going to like it. But that is a whole, I'm a water skier and like anything outdoors. And
what do you think holds people back from doing things? Because I'll just tell you for myself, I live in a neighborhood in Seattle. It's called West Seattle. And we are, we're just a little bridge. We're peninsula. We're just a bridge away from downtown Seattle. And a lot of what I do and a lot of what we do is we travel abroad. You know, I'm traveling a lot to other countries and then taking little trips here and there around the U.S. It's really hard to get me across the bridge.
That's funny.
It is. And, I've got friends who are out hiking all the time in the mountains because we could drive 30, 40 minutes, on a Saturday morning and go for a really nice hike. But I have my own inertia around that. And maybe, I'll give myself a pass and say, well, when I'm home, I want to hunker down. And,
right.
And I'm also running, on the weekends, I'll do long runs or whatever. So there is that. But I do admit that there is this feeling of inertia of, it's such a hassle to do X. And I can put myself in somebody else's place who maybe they aren't traveling abroad. Maybe they have more time to do things locally. But it's that bit of inertia.
I'm terrified of inertia, actually, I think. I'm afraid. I'm afraid to stop because I think if I stop, if I don't go do something tomorrow, then it's going to be easier not to do something the next day. I'm kind of OCD that way, so I'm sure my husband would just be laughing his right now. But I
because he agrees,
yes,
because he would
because
agree with
he
that.
Know he yeah. Well, no, I mean, he thinks I'm a little over the top, but
in terms of like wanting to be active and do
yes,
the next
like
thing.
I cannot sit still. I cannot sit still. It's like I. Shortly after we were married, I remember one day he said, we have a lot of stuff we need to do. Why don't you skip swim practice this morning? And I was like, I don't know if that's a good idea, really. But I did. I skipped swim practice. And then I turned into like a, really grumpy, crotchety person for the rest of the day. And he said, Pam, you will never switch swim practice again. Everyone will be happier that way.
Yeah.
So it brushes off. So I know this about myself and I know I can't sit still. And I am fearful that if I sit still tomorrow, then I'll sit still the next day and then the day after that. Like it's some sort of weird thing. And I'm not sure what made me think of this, but I have another friend that we did a couple of years ago. We did a series of small events around Austin that were called Pocket Adventures. And so the Pocket Adventure, the reason we came to it was we had noticed that Barton Springs is a wonderful natural swimming hole in the middle of Austin. And we had both noticed that going to Barton Springs, which is a touristy place where lots of people go there, that there would be lots of people in the water, but there was this whole contingent of people, mostly women my age or, from 30 to 60 or whatever, who were sitting on the edge of the pool or sitting on their towels. Watch with their hair dry, watching everybody else have fun. And we're like,
see, that sometimes that's me.
No, that's not allowed, you see. So we came up with a motto, get your hair wet. So our series of events was short, like hour long things. We lured people in with breakfast tacos. And then we would have like a little educational component. And then we would have some kind of activity like yoga, or we'd go for a hike, or we would. One time we had a musician and she sang songs and stuff and we would learn something, we'd do something fun. But the rule was if you participated at the end of that activity, everyone had to go down and jump into Barton Springs. You had to get your hair wet. You had to,
no matter the weather.
And it could be men or women. It wasn't just women that were going. And I think a lot of women hesitate to do stuff because they're worried about what they're going to look like when they do it. And they're worried that their hair is going to get messed up or their mascara is going to streak. Or, you know what? I think it's much more attractive to go out and do something and tackle life and have fun and enjoy yourself than it is to like look like a Barbie doll.
Yeah.
Really, because really, what does that matter?
That's not my problem.
Yeah. Well, like, I think it is a problem for a lot of people.
Yeah, I don't care about that so much. But I get... I remember driving in the car with my mom and her always wanting the window up because she didn't want her hair.
Yeah.
And she had short hair, but it was permed, really fine hair. Yeah. It was permed. So I can see how it might have gotten really messy, crazy. But I'll just never forget that kind of that feeling of like sometimes I roll down the window and I'm like, I'm just rolling down the window
because mom can't tell me not to.
Yeah. Well, because like almost in her honor, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I like
just like
that.
Like she didn't do it. So I'm going to do it. You know, it's just a little bit different.
And I think a lot of people don't try new things because that's not the role that they were taught to play, kind of. So.
And if they don't have role models to do that. And you know, honestly, that's why these conversations are so important and so wonderful for me, because I get to hear the stories and I get to like kind of draw these stories out, which really inspires me. And I hope that listeners hear that too. Because if we don't hear these kinds of stories and we don't hear what other people are doing and have those role models, then we don't think. And just having access today with the technology and, you know, with the podcasts and even blogs and however the format is.
Right.
Just having that access is so amazing, just to be able to hear the stories.
Yeah.
So,
like it is normal to get out and do stuff. It doesn't have to be unusual. Like we should all be doing these things, I think.
Yeah, true.
Stretch yourself.
We've got, we have friends in Seattle. We've got this one friend, Ted, who is, he looks like Mr. Clean. That's who I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
So yes, exactly.
I can see him.
So he's in his early 70s, or maybe he might've just turned 70. Sorry, Ted. Bald. And he'll wear red prescription glasses.
Great.
And
I love it.
Red Doc Martens and red pants.
Awesome.
And he walks into a room and you know Ted is arrived.
Yes,
you know?
I love that.
It is awesome. And it's and I always think like everybody needs a little Ted in themselves, but also everybody needs to be around a Ted to remind you that it's okay to be a little bit outrageous.
Yes.
And even
I mean he's
more than a little bit. But it's an infusion of like, you know, it's okay to be like this, you know, have a smile on your face and you can get away with a lot.
I love that.
For sure. Yeah. Anyway, I think that hearing about your year of adventure is great. And somebody doesn't have to commit to a year, but they can wake up tomorrow and they can say, you know what? One of the things that I was thinking was that I had this gal, Sue Hollis, on the podcast, and she's Australian. She spends half her year in Canada. And she rode a motorcycle, all around the West, through in Canada and the West Coast of the U.S. for 9 months. I'm going to say, was it 3 months? 3 months, maybe. 3 months. 90 days. But she has this thing where it's pay coffee forward. And so she gets in line.
I love that.
So she gets in line, and then she turns around and says, I'm paying coffee forward. What would you like today? I'm buying your coffee.
That's so great.
And I just thought, that is a really great thing,
you
know. And then she said some people are weird about it, like, I don't need your charity, but you know, the vast majority, she strikes up these great conversations,
and they probably do it to
hopefully but
the
fact that she's got this great accent,
that helps, right?
You know, she's in North America.
Maybe we should
really
adopt
different
foreign accents.
Well, why not? Yeah, we could do that. Yeah, for sure. So you had mentioned that you were very close with your dad,
right?
And was he a bit of an adventurer himself? He had this buddy that was.
Yeah, he did. And it's funny because the one thing that he was an aeronautical engineer. So he worked on rockets.
Yeah, he's a rocket scientist.
Yeah, he was a rocket scientist. Yeah. My dad was a rocket scientist. I love to say that. And he worked on countermeasures to something called chaff. So a military plane would shoot out a cloud of chaff, and that would scramble the radars of the enemy planes that were trying
What's
to track
chaff?
It. Chaff is chaff. Was what I think that's how you pronounce it, was whatever the plane shot out to scramble the radars of whatever was trying to track it.
I hadn't heard that before.
Yeah, so that's what he was one of the inventors of it, of this type of chaff. So, and he was a nerdy scientist, and he wore tall black socks and goofy sandals, and he was just a dork. Yes, and shorts. He was the biggest dork, and I loved him so much. He loved Twizzlers, you know, the little red licorice things, and he was a goofball, and he taught me to be curious. And when we were kids, he would pile us all. We had a Volkswagen van bus thing, and we would all pile into that, and he would drive us all over to different parks to look at stuff. And he instilled in me this curiosity to be about the world around me. Like, my dad would get so excited over things that you would think were mundane. We would go on a walk. He would pick up a rock, and he would just marvel at a rock.
He was just goofing on you guys.
No, he wasn't, though. He was truly, like, he would think about it, and then he would think about, where did that rock come from, and who held it, and what's its story. And he would contact people that didn't know him to ask them questions, and he was a staunch believer in climate change, and he would gather all this information and go talk to people at his church about climate change, and they didn't believe him because anyway. But he I loved him so much, and I can't remember your question about, oh, was he an adventurer?
Yeah,
so
was he?
The only really adventurous thing that he did, oddly, was he rafted the Grand Canyon just with buddies on a rafting trip, which seemed adventurous. I mean, now people do that all the time. You can go with a guided tour group and do it. But that seemed very exotic to me at the time. He wasn't. I really don't know where it came from.
But it's the curiosity. So, but what he instilled upon you was curiosity. And,
yeah.
And I can't help but reflect on my own mangled childhood.
Mangled, right.
You know, I don't know. Yeah. I don't try to think of a quick word for it. Yeah. It wasn't curious. You know, and that's so, and I am constantly amazed that we as a human race actually get along as well as we do, because when you really start to think about the things that influenced us, like, there's a gazillion things that influenced you when you were growing
right.
up. There's a gazillion things,
right.
good and bad, that influenced me when I was growing up. And the fact that we can sit here and go, oh my gosh, you are like so cool.
Yeah.
And like, just
isn't that funny.
Yeah, it is really interesting. But so as I think about your curiosity about the world and about adventure, I think I'm curious. I think different things motivated me. And I think for me, growing up, like, you know, white in a mostly white community in New Jersey, I couldn't wait to get out. And I am so over the top fascinated with indigenous cultures. And I think it's because they are so different than me. But I wasn't taught that. Something happened that I wanted the opposite. You know, that's
interesting.
Yeah.
One thing I wanted to say was, so when I grew up, I had really, really buck teeth. Like, my lips didn't close around my mouth. So kids made fun of me all the time. So I was extremely introverted and shy and kind of embarrassed of how I looked and didn't have friends and all that. So, you know, the sob story, whatever.
Yeah.
But I think, like, I finally had braces for 7 years, jaw surgery to fix my jaw. Like, it was...
Oh, we have to talk about that.
Yeah. Great.
Yeah.
But I think...
How old were you?
When I had the jaw surgery, I was actually like 21.
Oh.
Yeah, so it was older than
life. You were an adult.
Yeah, but I had the braces for 7 years when I was little.
Seven years.
I think I was so messed up because of my self-consciousness over the way I looked, and like... Nobody, like, kids literally, like, call me a saber-toothed tiger. Like, why would, anyway, I go on all day about that.
Yeah.
But so I think, like, I have the satisfaction now of, like, oh, yeah, you thought I was a dork then. I'm proud of being a nerd. I don't have a problem with being a nerd. But I was like, you made fun of me then. But, like now, it's like it kind of drives me to want to do stuff. Weirdly, I mean, and that was so long ago. Like, why does that matter anymore? But it really...
But you turned it into a positive.
Yes.
You know?
Right. I think that's what you kind of have to look for, ways to do that.
Yeah.
So it has kind of driven me. Like, it's weird to think that something.
Is it pretty conscious for you? Or do you kind of think, like, I don't know, on Facebook, you're friends with those folks and you say, fuck you. Look what I'm, look when, what I'm doing
it's
now.
Funny because like, oh, I can think of a classmate when I was in probably fourth or fifth grade who was the one, the ringleader. And I didn't have friends then. And now he's a psychiatrist. Which is kind of funny. But anyway, and
he's making amends.
Yeah. But it was like cruel. Like I can remember being in junior high and all the popular, there was like a carnation sale or something. And all the popular girls or somebody bought carnations and sent them to the football players and signed them from me, even though I didn't do it as a joke. And I was like, I was so mortified. And like, these were not people I hung out with. Like, wow, it was bad. Ugh. Anyway,
so I'll tell you two little quick stories because I can identify with the teeth thing because I have crooked teeth and I'm very self-conscious about it as well. But the thing about it is that a number of years ago, I went to several orthodontists in the Seattle area. Like, what can I do? Just rip them out and just give me,
give me wooden ones.
Yes, exactly. I'm totally cool with that. No one would do it. But what they said was, I've got, you know, I always make a joke that, I'm 5'2", but I've got a big mouth, you know? and so I joke that I've got this big mouth, yet my problem is my mouth is so small, it doesn't fit my teeth.
Right.
And so in order to do it, it's not only braces, but it's the cracked jaw.
That's
and
what they did to me.
It's that screw. They would have to crack my upper.
Oh, I have all kinds of screw. Yeah.
Oh, no
they
kidding.
Did
so
that
yeah,
to me.
They would have to open up
palate.
My palate.
And then
and then you do the screw yourself. And I'm like, yeah, I'm out of here. Like that I am not doing.
I have to, before you leave, I'm going to show you pictures of me with my teeth and all the glory. But
I know.
But now here's my dad. But now it makes me happy to see that I kind of get over that, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you went through the pain of doing it, but anyway, the other thing that I was going to say that I can identify with, and I've mentioned this, I don't try to make a too big a deal out of it, but I grew up with a alcoholic father who drank himself to death and cirrhosis, and he was not in my formative years. He was not a nice guy, and so he told me I was ugly and fat and couldn't do anything right. And a lot of it was joking, right? It was like,
there's a stem.
Oh, yeah, there is. And especially a 8, 10, 12-year-old, right? Like going into my teens. And I think now I'm like, he died a number of years ago. And I just think, like, who's laughing now?
Yeah.
You know, like, exactly. So, and I think that's a driver for me as well. But it's interesting. I try to think of it in more of a positive way of like, you know, I'm going to turn this around. I'm not going to be the alcoholic. I'm going to have a healthier lifestyle. I'm going to take care of myself and I'm going to show you.
Yeah.
And still there's probably, I've let go of a lot of that anger, but there's still that bit of like, oh, you know, but
it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
I have underlying anger.
Yeah.
Too,
but it's interesting how all that comes together to form us. And it's important to, and I'm looking at your rack here of huge rack of your sporting equipment,
oh my God.
to channel that into something that's positive. And I don't think there's anything wrong with being an athletic addict, you know, or, you know, being kind
it
of.
It could be
hooked.
Heroin.
It
this
could
is much
be.
Better.
Right. I know. That's what I think too. You know, I could be addicted to, other things as things go. This is not bad.
Yes,
so
I agree.
Anyway, aware of the time, because I know you have to go to your paddle. Oh my God, how fun. Let me ask you, is there anything first that we didn't cover that you'd like to just chat about or bring up?
Thank you for asking that. I always try to ask that too.
I mean, I know we could go on for another 2 hours.
Yeah, but no, I think we covered the main things that I wanted to discuss.
And we were just getting to the good meat, too.
Yeah, I know, right? I know. Come back tomorrow.
Tomorrow's the therapy session. So you feel like we covered
I think so.
A bit of everything? Yeah. Okay, good. So what I like to do is I like to wrap up the episodes and ask, what does it mean to you to be bold?
Wow. To me, to be bold means to be true to your inner self and to do stuff that maybe your whole life people were telling you can't do, but you're going to try it. So it means kind of throwing yourself out there and not being afraid of making a fool of yourself.
How do you find your inner self? Because I think a lot of people don't even know how to get in touch with themselves.
If there was nobody else on the planet, nobody, and you were just there by yourself, scrambling over rocks and looking for something to eat or whatever you're doing out there, what would you do? How would you act then? If no one was there to watch you or care about you. You wouldn't be trying to impress with someone with how smart you were or how funny you were or what you looked like. So how would you just act?
Yeah, but somebody may say, I would just lay down and die.
I wouldn't. Would you?
Well, no, I wouldn't.
Yeah.
But
maybe that's their inner self. Right?
Well, yeah, it could be.
No, I hope not.
You know what? Maybe shining a light on that is in and of itself enough to know about yourself, because do you really want to be that person?
And when you think about it, like when I left my job, like I'm leaving my job. Why am I leaving my job? What is it that I really want to get out of life? What really makes you happy? For me, it's being outside and participating in life and not watching it go by and like looking for new things and trying to experience life in a different way and challenging myself and doing things that make me feel uncomfortable. And then I realize, well, maybe they're not so scary after all.
And then what's the next thing? Yeah. Right? That's what it's
always. Yeah, but it always drops from the sky. I never have to figure it out. It always happens.
Yeah. And then is there a place where people can find you?
Yes. So I'm working on a website. The website will be PamelaBlancAdventures.com, but it's not up yet. But you can find me on Facebook either under Pamela LeBlanc, LeBlanc, or on Facebook at Pam LeBlanc Adventures. And I'm in just different publications that I mentioned earlier.
Fun. So we can Google you and find it. Google. Especially the Statesman. And I'll link to some of those articles
that'd
as well
great.
In the show notes so people can read about
Thank
that.
You.
So, oh my gosh, thanks so much.
So
for your,
fun.
This was really fun.
We should hang out.
I know we should. You should come to Seattle.
I know.
Get me out of Seattle. I'll bring you hiking. Yes. Then I'll bring you hiking. So thanks again so much. And thanks for having me in your home
today.
Thank
you. It was really fun.
That conversation really stuck with me. The morning after we recorded, I couldn't help shake it. And I've since been thinking about the stories I continue to tell myself, like I don't like swimming in cold water and I'd never jump out of a plane or bungee jump. I can't say for sure that I'm going to do those things in 2019, but the thought has more than crossed my mind that I'm going to do the polar bear plunge on January 1st here at our local beach. That's a start, because that's a big thing. I don't want to go in cold water, but we'll see January 1st. Don't forget to check out my Patreon page. It's a small price to pay, $5, to continue enjoying these conversations. I'd love to know that you're out there listening and that you want to be part of this community and to help me grow the podcast. Thank you in advance. And don't forget, the first 10 people will have the opportunity to receive either a Be Bold bracelet or a Be Bold baseball cap. That's patreon.com/BeBold. You can also connect with me by friending me on Facebook, and I'm WonderGal on Instagram. For show notes, check out the BeBoldPodcast.com website for each episode and sign up for the email alerts each time a new episode comes out. Those show notes also show up in whatever app you're using to listen, so you can find them there as well. You can find out more about me by visiting wanderlustandlipstick.com. Sign up for my newsletter on the Wanderlust and Lipstick site, and you'll receive a series of tips for making your travels safer. I've been fortunate enough to work with some great companies to do product giveaways as well. And most recently, I was working with Prana and also Black Rapid Camera Straps. And so get on that newsletter list. I've got some fun giveaways coming up in the new year as well, and I announce those in the newsletter so you can take part in that. Finally, you can check out wandertours.com if you would like to travel with me. It's wander tours.com. Don't forget to leave a message at 877-280-5170 so I can feature you in an end-of-year episode highlighting what you have done to be bold. Ladies, don't forget to check out the Be Bold Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/BeBoldGroup. You're going to love the positivity, the encouragement, and the support from that community. While you're online, go to the Be Bold Podcast Facebook page and give that a like. Thanks for joining me for another episode of the Be Bold Podcast. And until next time, be bold.